leave it to Schneider Tree Care.
You're listening to Facts on Sports with Faxon and John. Now let's get back to the show.
Hour number two of the program here on a Monday with Faxon and John on the Roar. 654-ROAR is the number if you'd like to check in. Talking a lot of college ball. We got some NFL to get to as well. Great weekend in the world of college football with a ton of great games. And we were just breaking down that Wake Forest Georgia Tech game before break. We're going to take that and run with it after Knowles Fan gets in on the phones. Knowles Fan, how we doing, man? Hope you had a good weekend.
Man, thank y'all for letting me get in. Had a great weekend. You know, always got to get in, win or lose. What a game Friday night, man. That was just a good college football game, in my opinion. I'm, you know, obviously down that we lost the game, but after two wins last year, you know, you just kind of take every game this year. Three wins already, so it's already been better than last year. But, no, man, I was happy with the response for the most part of the Florida State. I don't think we played a clean game, though. You know, you shot yourself in the foot with too many penalties and some bad turnovers, especially right there in the red zone right there near the goal line. So I think Virginia just played really well, and you can't play your C or B minus game and beat Virginia on the road when they play like that. So you just got to tip your hat to Virginia, and I think they deserve the win that night. I think we could get them. I think if Florida State come out and played better, and didn't shoot themselves in the foot, I think we could win that game still. I still do, but.
Yeah,
you didn't win that game, and Virginia did. So, I mean, you got to give credit to Virginia. So I'm not taking any credit away. I just think penalties and bad turnovers and bad times hurt us. And we didn't respond. Like, after halftime, like, you got to go out there. Your offense is the heartbeat of this team. I think we've seen that Friday night. And you got to go respond. When you're tied, you got to go out there and you got to score a touchdown. You can't afford not get any points right there. So. That's my thoughts on the game. You got Miami Saturday night. It's going to be a big game. I think Florida State has a chance. I'm not sold on Carson Beck. I've never been. But we're going to have to score some points, and our offense is just going to have to click, and you're not going to be able to punt or turn over the ball much. But, man, thank y'all so much for letting me get in. I just want to give my two cents. And what y'all's thoughts on the game? What you think?
Yeah, Knowles Fan, we appreciate you getting in. Thank you, brother, as always here on a Monday. And I will say this on Florida State. My number one concern with them coming away from this game is missed tackles. That's my biggest issue with Florida State right now. I think that costs them tons of yardage at crucial junctures during the game, on key downs. Like, it wasn't a effort thing. I do think the guys were playing hard. It looked like Virginia wanted it more. Like, they had an extra gear of effort. Jamari Taylor was the specific one that we talked about in the first hour of the program. There were multiple times where he would get hit at the line of scrimmage, and he would just barrel forward for 4 or 5 yards. That puts a toll on your defense throughout the course of the game, where you feel like you're getting pushed on the interior up front, and you're hitting this guy in the backfield, and he's shedding one of those 300-pound defensive linemen and getting to that second level of the defense, and it might not pop off the stat sheet, but, John, that's something that's big for your mentality as games, you know, continue to unfold. So when you're breaking tackles at the line of scrimmage consistently, you're getting to that second, third level, that means there's a lot of stress on your guys on the perimeter to be tough as well. And there were some missed tackles there for Florida State. Like, you got to be more fundamentally sound if you're FSU.
You definitely have to be more fundamentally sound. And you can't get blown off. I'm talking about the Florida State defensive line here. You can't get blown off the ball like you did against Virginia.
Yeah.
Because as much as I like this Virginia team and as fun as they are, Miami's guys up front are better. They're going to walk into the... It's at Florida State, correct?
It is at FSU.
Yeah, I feel very good about Miami up front in this game. Feel very good based on... I still think Florida State has talent along both lines of scrimmage. But I thought Virginia did a very good job of really running right at Darryl Jackson Jr., and he's supposed to be the anchor of that three-man front. I saw some things from Florida State defensively that the offensive line that Miami should be very excited to see on film.
Yeah, Miami's got arguably the best O-line in the country. They're a team that wants to run the football. They're a team that wants to get under center. So Florida State, we got to shore up some tackling issues, or it could be a long night in Tallahassee. Absolutely. On Saturday. You got to be able to break down guys on the perimeter. Your corners have to be tougher. Your linebackers have to play better. Everybody's got to play better on the defensive side of the ball. And then Castellanos on O's got to do a better job of protecting the football.
And you're right about like the protection part of it. And I think just the game script for Florida State is very, I mean, it's Pete Gus, right?
Yeah.
You've got to be able to run the football and stay ahead of the chains, because we've seen, as much as I like Tommy Castellanos running around making plays out of the backfield, if the sole objective for him on a given play is to just throw it, Miami's going to win in what, they're a 4.5-point favorite in Tallahassee right now. They're going to cover that number.
Yeah, he's not a drop-back passer or a traditional thrower of the football.
No, and I think Florida State needs to do a better job in this game of putting him in situations where it's not as apparent when he does throw it. I do think, to give Florida State something positive coming out of here, that true freshman 32, I'd be giving him the football a lot more than 12 times a game.
He's a player.
That guy is the future of that offense down there in Tallahassee. He is an impressive ball carrier.
They got some talented young guys at FSU.
I love what they've done from a personnel standpoint, and you know, give them credit even in the loss. Like, I think they did a very good job of going into the portal with a plan.
Yeah.
Versus last year, I felt like they just went to the portal to field a team. Like, they went and found guys whose skill set fits what they're trying to do, and it helps when you hire a coach who has an identity.
Yeah.
That he's going to instill. No, I feel very good about both these teams moving forward. I do have questions. You know, I don't think these are perfect teams. And I also think it could be better for Florida State in the era of where you don't have to be perfect to get into the postseason. This may be the type of team that, from just a mentality standpoint, does better with just going ahead and getting the loss out of the way and not having to deal with 13-1 to 2-10. Can we have like as big of a swing go the other way? I think that takes a lot of pressure out of that locker room.
Yeah, and he did drop the game-tying touchdown with the bobble, but Deuce Robinson was one of the best players on the field, if not the best at times. I liked this Florida State portal haul because it reminded me a lot of 2023 FSU. And that was kind of my read on this team coming into the year, was that they were going to be a watered-down version of 2023. Castellanos got a similar play, saw the Jordan Travis. Deuce Robinson's your Johnny Wilson, right? Your 6'5 jump ball guy. That's what this team needs. That's what Mike Norvell needs offensively, is he needs a mobile quarterback to run around and make plays outside of structure, and he needs a jump ball guy. And they've got those guys. It would be nice if Deuce could hold on to the football with the game on the line wide open, uncontested in the end zone. Tommy put it on his chest, too. The last thing I'll say about this one before we shift gears to this Georgia Tech game, do you think he caught it? Like, did he have possession in your eyes? Because in real time, I really thought he was able to get both feet down and possess the ball. Then they started doing the 15 different replay angle thing, and it looked like maybe there was a juggling. I actually think if he would have just held it with his fingertips the whole way through, he would have been given the touchdown, but he had the fatal flaw, which was adjusting it after he had already possessed it, and that's where they got him, was he tried to, like, shift it and re-grip the ball.
I think it was the right call. I think it was the right call. I agree with your breakdown of the call. I think, if he would have done that, you're probably right. But based on the readjustment,
yeah,
that was the right call.
They need to – every league needs to apply the – this is the only thing you need to take from the ACC, other leagues. You need to apply the national TV broadcast inside the ref room. I think that's very interesting and also probably good for integrity purposes to have a live look in at what's going on in Charlotte and have a live look in at what these conversations look like and what the decision-making process looks like. That's been a really good job from the ACC, in my opinion, thus far, and I found that very intriguing personally. So, rare shout-out to the ACC here on the program. But the ACC did deliver some cinema this past weekend and some electric football, including but not limited to Georgia Tech and Wake Forest. Let's talk about it. The 16th ranked Yellow Jackets go on the road to Winston-Salem. They get punched in the mouth, and Wake Forest blows another double-digit lead down the stretch. Aye, aye, aye. Man, I'll tell you, I love this Wake team. I know that they've burnt the win back-to-back weeks. They're playing good football right now, man. They're playing good football. They're playing above their head is what they are. And they're playing above their talent level. And that's kind of what I anticipated with Dickert. Dickert's a winner. He's won every stage of his career. They've got to figure out a way to play 60 minutes of complete football and close these games. Because even with the bad call included in this, and yes, they should have won and it should have been over, they had four or five other opportunities to slam the door shut on Georgia Tech, including but not limited to a 27-yard field goal that they missed off the upright. Come on, man. I'm making it from 27. What are we doing here? Wake blew it. John, your thoughts?
Brent Key still can't get his team up for an opponent that doesn't have a number next to their name.
Crazy.
They were as flat as can be.
They didn't care.
They were incredibly flat. I have a question for the four-letter network and something that happened a lot in this game. Does Clemson stink or are they a top 15 opponent? Because I need them to pick a lane.
Yes.
All the credit that was given to Georgia Tech throughout the broadcast, not about the other wins they've accomplished on their schedule so much, but it was, man, what they did against a top 15 team. Stop.
Yeah, you're 1-3.
Credit on their own merit. Stop dragging. I thought that was very lazy by the broadcast, honestly. They brought that up way too much. What was the point?
Yeah.
You're a 1-3 football team. They don't get credit for a top 15 win. That stuff drives me nuts. I struggle with this Georgia Tech team to put them in Charlotte because of, are they going to be able to always rally and respond? They came out flat on the road.
I'll tell
you. And then it's Wake Forest because they can't hold on to a lead.
Yes.
I don't disagree with a lot of your love for the Jackets and this team and this program. But there's enough meat on the bone of this schedule where they can come out. I don't see a lot of ranked teams along the way here.
Well, he's 7-1 against those ranked opponents, but they showed a graphic on the broadcast. He's 9-8 now against the unranked ACC opponents. If you're going to mention the success against ranked opponents, this... Again, I'm not concerned about playing Clemson. I'm not even concerned about playing Georgia. I'm concerned about playing Wake Forest. I'm concerned about playing Pitt and Duke and Virginia Tech.
At Boston College, at NC State, against Syracuse and all. Fran Brown, that's a game that Syracuse is going to be fired up to. Maybe not with Ricky Collins. But,
yeah.
I don't trust this team to go all the way.
It's hard to.
After the way that they've... 4-0, you think, man, that there's nobody left on the schedule that can beat them outside of Georgia. Anybody can beat this team.
Yeah.
If they don't care enough, if they don't come in with that word we used down at Chick-fil-A with Herb, if they don't come into a game with all the machismo that they can bring, they're going to take a loss somewhere on the schedule. I don't know where, but they're going to take one.
And I'll also maintain it's a limited offense to a certain degree with the way that they run. When you run your quarterback that much... You are subjecting yourself to getting got, man. You are.
Oh, absolutely.
They have 3 wins against the Power 4. They've had to run them 20-plus times in all 3 of those games to win, and they won by 1, and they won by 3, and they won by 5. Listen, I love this Georgia Tech team. Y'all know I've loved them for years. I love Brent Key. I still think there's a good chance this team does end up in the ACC championship game. I'm going to give them a good chance in their respect to beat that Georgia team, especially being on the sidelines last year, doing sideline reporting for that crazy UGA-GT game, right? They should have won that game. But they got a big-time break this past Saturday, and they're very lucky that they're not waking up 1-1 in ACC playing unranked right now. Very, very, very fortunate. Very, very, very lucky. And the notion that there's 3 to 5 plays that confirm who the winner is in every game was applicable here. But I'll tell you where I thought Wake Forest lost the game. This is where I thought Wake Forest lost the game. It wasn't, we talk about the offsides, whatever. Third quarter, you're up 17-3 and you're getting the rock. You have a chance to go night-night Georgia Tech. You put them down 24-3 and they're done, man. They're done. They're done. They're dead in a ditch at this point. They get down to the 7, and they do this little thing where they sub in Deshaun Purdy, who's the backup quarterback, probably traditionally a little bit better of a thrower of the football. He missed a wide-open touchdown. Wide-open touchdown.
To your question on Friday, I don't know why Robbie Ashford is still starting for this football team. Deshaun Purdy laid it out for you.
Oh my gosh.
As clear as day. This is why Robbie Ashford is your starting quarterback in Winston-Salem.
It's 3rd and 5 from the 7. Offensive coordinator cooks up a crossing route. Sterling Burkhalter, again, he's the distance between John and I in the glass here, which is no more than 5 feet. Smoked it. Completely smoked it. So what do? You settle for 3. Okay, well now you're up 17 instead of 21. That's a big difference because that's two touchdowns and a field goal versus three touchdowns. And Georgia Tech didn't score three more touchdowns in regulation. They only scored two. So they get back into the game. We go down to this final drive, right, where Wake Forest has got this ensuing possession to potentially try and put the game away, okay? And they get the ball. They run it up the middle. Run it up the middle again. They get a penalty, first down, post two-minute warning, whatever. It sets up the third and five, which is stealing the national storylines here with this game. And the best way I know how to describe it to the audience at home is Wake Forest did get robbed in this one. I'm not a ref blamer. That's not really my style. You don't win or lose the game on one play, right? Because if Purdy throws that touchdown, as we alluded to, or if Wake, again, makes a 27-yard field goal, they likely win this game. Georgia Tech's in the neutral zone on third and five, minute 48 left, and they've got zero timeouts. Ashford sees the guy jump into the neutral zone out of his peripheral vision and responds thinking, oh, this is a free play. I'm going to throw the ball up. So he just chucks it up, and there was nothing. There was no flag. So should Ashford have waited to see the flag before just chucking the ball up blindly? Yeah, probably. Yeah, that's probably a fair ask. But at the end of the day, that can't happen. That can't happen. We can't continue. And this isn't even just about this individual result. I don't care if it's BC, Stanford, or Cal versus, you know, Virginia Tech. It doesn't matter, man. This league has way too many blown calls on a week-to-week basis for this to continue. The standard needs to be raised for level of like efficiency and effectiveness with officiating. Like, that has to happen. You're on the field. You're on the sidelines. Your one job is to be watching the line of scrimmage. There's somebody with a dedicated job to be watching the line of scrimmage. You watch it with your own two eyes. You have a flag in your pocket. That is a no-brainer 10 times out of 10 call. And unfortunately for the Demon Deacons, it took a victory away from them. Georgia Tech takes care of business 30-29 in overtime after a failed two-point conversion from the Demon Deeks, and the rest is history. Quick break here on the program. We're going to have Dre and Noah check in on the phone lines right after this.
Have you heard the phrase, the calm before the storm? Well, that mold in your bathroom or ceiling stains might be a warning sign of roof damage that could cause bigger, costly issues in the future. Give yourself peace of mind, knowing your roof's got you covered with the best protection throughout all of the seasons. Don't ignore it any longer. Fix it with one simple call today. Adams & Co. Roofing Specialists, 260-0080. Adams & Co. Roofing Specialist, 260-0080.
A scholarship doesn't just pay for school.
When I first started out, I'd be around the baseball field all day, just watching the guys' feet, like how they're moving, how they're breaking out of the clay. Turfgrass management is not just cutting grass. There's so much more to it.
It turns passion into purpose.
The South Carolina Education Lottery definitely allowed me to find myself again, to get an education, eventually starting my organization. I got legs.
Adam and Greg are two of over 750,000 Life Scholars giving back for a better South Carolina. Visit seeducationlottery.com/betteryou.
At Certified Diesel, we value keeping your diesel truck running smoothly and efficiently. Located at 2209 Highway 292 in Inman, South Carolina, we specialize in light-duty diesel truck repairs and maintenance. Whether you drive a Powerstroke, Cummins, or Duramax, our expert technicians have you covered. Avoid the hassle of dealership maintenance and choose us for all your diesel needs. Call and visit us today at 864-345-4568 or check out our services online at CertifiedDieselLLC.com.
Sometimes it's the little victories that mean the most. Those everyday celebrations that bring a smile to our faces and joy to our hearts. At Ingles, we know there's no one you'd rather share those miniature memorable moments with than family. Ingles, all the ingredients for family.
Hey, it's Walt. Forget the 12-hour drive to Buffalo. Moretti's Pizzeria and Bar in Walden is serving the real deal. Stone oven pizza, thicker than New York City. Never doughy, just that perfect crust. The wings, crispy, juicy, and loaded with that buttery, spicy buffalo kick. And if you've never had one, order the legendary beef on weck. You'll thank me later. Moretti's, just off I-385 on East Butler Road in Walden. Moretti's, where everyone's a regular.
Greenville has a long mattress manufacturing history going back to 1931 when Orders Mattress Company was born. Today, the fourth generation of the Orders family is still making some of the best mattresses in the U.S. Visit Engineered Sleep's one-of-a-kind mattress showroom on Pleasantburg Drive, across from Krispy Kreme, and find your next mattress. Enjoy free in-home delivery, a 100-night sleep trial, and of course, a great night of sleep. Visit EngineersSleep.com.
Is your crawl space damp or musty? Water in your crawl space can cause wood to rot and create an environment for mold and mildew that can make its way inside your home. Canty Foundation Specialist specializes in crawl space repair. Call us today for your free inspection so you can have the peace of mind knowing your crawl space is dry and your home is protected. Call today, 864-641-0176, or visit CantyCanFixIt.com.
Royal Flush Toilet Rentals. If you want a potty like a rock star, you can with us. At Royal Flush Toilet Rentals, we offer construction porta potty rentals, septic tank pumping, and luxury toilet trailers. Call 864-238-8800. We have two-stall, three-stall, and four-stall trailers for your corporate events, wedding parties, and special occasions. Call 864-238-8800. Royal Flush Toilet Rentals.
We all know and love Eggs Up Grill, but did you know they cater? From brunchy buffets to breakfast samplers, wraps, sandwiches, and salads, Eggs Up Grill has the best catering options in town. Are you a business owner or office manager looking to elevate your next meeting or party? How about a coach looking for your next team meal or box lunches? Visit Eggs Up Grill of Clemson, Seneca, or Greenwood. Ordering couldn't be easier for pickup and delivery through Easy Cater. Just visit eggsupgrill.com and click on the catering button. That's eggsupgrill.com.
Huge savings on Dell AI PCs with Intel Core Ultra processors are here, and they're newly designed to help you do more faster. They can generate code, edit images, multitask without lag, draft emails, summarize documents, create live translations, and even extend your battery life. That's the power of Dell AI with Intel Inside. Upgrade today by visiting Dell.com/deals. That's Dell.com/deals.
Powered by Upcountry Fiber, we are 105.5 and 97.5 The Roar. Providing fiber internet, HDTV, and phone service, Upcountry Fiber is a stronger connection.
From kickoff to the final whistle, your front row seat to college football lives here on 105.5 and 97.5 The Roar, part of the ESPN family.
Welcome you back in, everybody. The Monday edition continues right here on 105.5 The Roar. Facts and Childress, John Hyde, continuing here with Facts on Sports. 654-ROAR is the number if you'd like to check in. It's time to talk about some more ranked matchups on the horizon this past weekend. And, John, I don't know how we've made it 90 minutes without getting to one in specific.
Yeah, so we are going to talk now about Alabama-Georgia. But I have a question for you as we... before we really break this game down.
Okay.
So I want to remove Ohio State's personnel from this question. Do you remember about a year and a half ago where offensive lineman for the Alabama Crimson Tide, Caden Proctor, went and did a study abroad at Iowa?
I do remember that. Was there for one semester
and then he transferred back?
Yeah, I do remember that.
So let's say that that transfer back never occurred and he stayed at Iowa. Like I said, we're removing Ohio State's personnel from this question. Could Caden Proctor at Iowa make first team all Big Ten at wide receiver?
There's a chance. There's a chance. There really is.
I know it was technically a rush because it was from behind the line of scrimmage where he caught the ball.
Yeah, but they threw it to
him. The way that he moved with the ball in his hands, I think he would have an argument to maybe even be on an all Big Ten selection team.
Why did he juke someone? And it worked.
How is he 360 pounds?
I have no idea. He got a stiff arm in there, too. I have no idea what
that was unbelievable.
It was. I saw him go out there, and I was like, oh, my gosh, are they going to throw it to him? Oh, and then it was just the processing in real time. It was like, oh, they're throwing to him. They're throwing to the 350-pound tackle.
You processed faster than some players on the Georgia defense did.
I still don't know what in the world happened with that play specifically. But I guess the Mean Machine in red and black were not coming down the track on Saturday night in Athens. 24-21, the Crimson Tide take the cake. Alabama gets the win. I'm a little bit shocked, man, to be honest. I mean, talk about a resilient signature win for Kalen DeBoer. Kalen DeBoer, this is the biggest win of his career. It's not even close. Not even close as far as being the Alabama head coach goes. Biggest win of his Alabama career to date. The number five Bulldogs go down on the road. Ty Simpson looked incredible. 24 for 38, 276 yards and two touchdowns. I actually have some interesting data from this weekend about him specifically and about what the biggest key to success was for Alabama in this game. So, 40 dropbacks for Ty Simpson in this one, which it's not too much against the norm, right? 38 passing attempts. I think he got sacked twice, you know. He only got pressured on 5 of the 40 dropbacks. 5. Think about how impressive that is. I don't even know if anything else needs to be said about my evaluation of the game. Like, we'll get into it. We'll talk about how Georgia ran the football, how this is the first time in like 20 years of this matchup between these two teams that the team that didn't win in rushing yards actually won the game. We'll get to all that data that I've gotten some numbers and some stats and more. But again, the story of the game by far and away was Alabama's elite pass protection. And Georgia has some issues on defense. That is not the same defensive line crop of talent that they had that are just all steamrolling to the Philadelphia Eagles at the NFL ranks. They could not touch Ty Simpson, John. 5 total pressures for Georgia and 40 dropbacks for Ty Simpson.
I mean, I think the only player in this game that Howie Roseman would have shown any interest in was probably Caden Proctor.
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't want any of those guys up in the interior for Georgia. I think the tackles are still solid at Georgia. On the defensive side of the ball, there's no pass rush. There's no guys on the outside that you fear.
Nope.
So that's something that needs to get addressed down there in Athens. I thought Gunnar Stockton was fine. He was certainly outplayed by Ty Simpson. I thought Ty Simpson was one of the best football players on the field Saturday night in Athens, Georgia. He was incredible. I do think from a positive note for Georgia, you have found your new RB1.
Yes.
And it ain't Nate Frazier, buddy. It's Chauncey Bowens.
Holy.
Give that man the football.
Where did he come from? He's running dudes over. Like, legitimately just taking the soul of Alabama defenders.
He's a freshman. That's where he came from.
It's just,
that's, you know, Georgia can still do that. Go out and pluck running backs.
That was what I kept saying to my TV was, dang, keep giving it to 33. Keep giving it to 33.
I also, it is shocking that Kalen DeBoer against Power 4 competition at Alabama is 5-5 against teams not named Georgia, and he's 2-0 against teams named Georgia.
Crazy. They lost that Michigan team last year, and he's 2-0 against Georgia.
So one of the things that was kind of shocking is how similar this game was to last year's game without the Ryan Williams of it all.
Yeah.
Like that Kalen DeBoer and this coaching staff for Alabama came in with a game plan that completely just bewildered Kirby Smart. That is appalling to see that twice, because I, you know, was a little surprised by it last year, but I would have thought with a second opportunity that they weren't going to be able to catch Kirby and this staff that off guard 2 times in a row.
Yeah, they got their butt whooped up front in the first half specifically. And, you know, I think a lot of people kind of widely view Kirby as the best halftime adjuster in college football. I thought the halftime adjustments were great, especially on defense.
Yes.
Alabama did not score in the second half, and Georgia still couldn't win because they only got to 7 in the second half. And that was for a ton of different reasons, right? So 654 Roar, if you want to check in, we're about to take all the phone calls as we get in the weeds with this game and where things swung. First half, Georgia goes 3-and-out. Bama goes right down the field. They take that lead into halftime. But there were 3 plays specifically in the second half that I thought Georgia lost the game on.
I would like to hear those 3 real quick. I do think that there is one player for Georgia that Howie Roseman could have scouted.
Which is?
And that's if Ellis Robinson wants to be the Eagle moving forward with the way that he flew in late on that play, that, you know, maybe he could get some run as the mascot.
What is that kid doing? What is he doing? It has been funny to see all the internet memes as a byproduct of that. That's been hilarious.
Oh, my goodness.
But
the memes were fantastic from him, but
Kirby looked like he was going to kill someone, and it's hard to blame him. Like, How do you have that? The game's on the line, dude. This is the game.
And the game wouldn't have been on the line, for the record, if Ryan Williams was the second-best receiver in college football like people claim him to be.
Yeah, Ryan Williams did drop a touchdown early. They ended up scoring a touchdown anyways, but what has happened to him? He's become... I mean, he's not the best. I got to give Mickey Plowler some credit. Mickey was talking about Bernard being the best receiver on this team in the preseason. I tend to agree with that assessment.
I like Bernard and Horton more than I like Williams right now.
He's got a drop problem, man. He's got a drop problem, and that's something that Georgia is all too familiar with. So Georgia makes it 24-21 after their first offensive possession of the second half, and no one scored again. No one scored. Bama goes 5 plays, 26 yards, 2.5 minutes, turnover on downs right at midfield. Georgia responds 3-and-out punt. Ugh. Oh, my gosh. Like, that's the moment. That is the moment. So what does the defense do? They get you another 3-and-out and punt. You get the ball back to start the fourth quarter. You get all the way down to Alabama's 10-yard line, okay? You're on Bama. It's 2nd-and-3 at the Alabama 10. You're down 24-21. Georgia has all the momentum on God's green earth. The three possessions in the second half for Alabama offensively were missed field goal, turnover on downs, 3-and-out punt to this date. They're reeling, man. They've got nothing. Georgia's got all the momentum. Georgia's taking over the total yardage battle. Georgia's gashing them on the ground. Georgia looks like the better football team at this point in time for really the first time all game. So you got 2nd-and-3 at the Alabama 10, and you run it for 0. Okay, not the end of the world. 4-down territory, right? Or if you have a loss on 2nd down or 3rd down, maybe you kick the field goal. You tie the game up at 24. You give yourselves a chance to get it to overtime. So they do this little designed run with Gunner. Loved the play call, to be completely honest. It's exactly what I was asking for from Bobo. Gunner was money in those short yardage distances throughout the course of this game, especially on those 3rd downs. This was the problem that I had. I think Gunner got this 1st down. And they rushed up to the line so quickly to try and go tempo with their next play call that they never got a review of the spot. They went back after the fact on the broadcast as well and looked at it. If Gunner didn't get the spot, he's definitely closer than where the ball was originally spotted, which I think changes your play call. But instead, they rush up to the line of scrimmage, right? Like, there is this extreme sense of urgency for Georgia. We got to go, we got to go, we got to go. So it's 4th-and-1 on the Alabama 8, and they run it to Cash Jones with the game on the line to the perimeter. You've been getting push on the interior all night. You averaged 7 yards a carry. You ran the ball for almost 250 yards. Your power back in Bowens is throwing guys off of him. So you rush to the line of scrimmage with no... You don't review the spot. You don't campaign that your quarterback got the 1st down. And then you snap the ball within 10 seconds. And instead of giving it to your mammoth 6'2", 250 darn near running back, you give it to 5'10", 180-pound soaking wet Cash Jones? Really? And then you run outside and you make him have to outrun an Alabama linebacker? That was just... awful. What are they thinking? What are they thinking? Like, what is the thought process with those three back-to-back-to-back play calls with the game on the line when you have all the momentum? Bowens has ran you all the way back into the game. He doesn't touch the ball once. He doesn't touch the ball once from inside the 10, John. Is there any logic to explain that decision? Like, I'm lost here. I'm lost. I'm completely lost with what the Georgia Bulldogs were doing in the red zone down the stretch. They blew this one, man. They absolutely blew it.
Yes. You're correct. You're 100% spot on. They blew it. You have a guy who is toting the rock at 9 yards a carry. You got a yard or so to get, and you got cute with it. What's the old level of... Yeah, Texter 3270, it's kind of what I want to say, but I'm just not saying it. So thank you for getting in with that. We're on the same page here between the three of us. We just don't have to say it. Yeah, you got too cute with it when you didn't need to.
I was dumbfounded, man. I was completely dumbfounded by that. And then also, Texter does get in and says, the TD drop by the receiver hurt. They must hate Gunner Stockton in Athens. They must hate him. That poor kid. Gunner put one on the money. It was arguably the best throw of his career. Cover two, you're taking the shot right up the middle between the safeties. He puts it on the true freshman. This is the thing. This is where things went wrong, John. The receiver jumped. You never do that. You're never taught to do that at any level of football. He's a true freshman. He's playing under the bright lights of Athens for the first time in Sanford Stadium. He's got a chance to give like a signature play. Like, this is the biggest moment of this kid's life, and I don't want to rip him too hard. He jumped when he tried to catch the ball, and there was no reason to jump. Gunner dropped it in the bucket in stride, and that threw off his balance, and then he bobbled, and man, oh man, I'm sorry, Georgia fans. That was a rough one, man. You completely blew it. You completely blew it, and there's no way for me to sugarcoat it to you this morning. For the life of me, I don't understand why Kirby wasn't campaigning for a spot review. The broadcast crew thought he got the first down. Texter points out the point that ESPN crew didn't even know it was fourth down. They didn't. Like, I think Gunner got it. I think you ran a fourth down play that you never had to run if your coach would have just said, hold on, there's no reason to rush here, and maybe we should be subbing for the 5'9", fifth string running back with one of our guys that weighs 240 pounds. We're going to talk more on the other side. I'm sorry, I put off some phone calls, but I had to get that off my chest. We're coming to Noah, Dre, and Seminole Ted immediately on the other side. We'll continue to break down Bama and Georgia, and Ty Simpson, he had himself a moment, a career day, Kalen DeBoer with the signature win, and Georgia fans are just kicking themselves here on a Monday morning. Quick break.
It's here. The brand new 2025 Tigers for Tata shirt is now available for pre-sale. Along with all new merchandise, every purchase stays in the upstate for breast cancer prevention and the fight against cancer. But we need your help to make this year's auction our biggest ever. We're asking for high-end item donations. Do you have a unique experience or valuable merchandise you'd like to donate? Your contribution is 100% tax deductible and will make a huge difference. Get your new gear and learn more at theroarfm.com. Tigers for Tatas, the All In Foundation, and you. Together, we can make a difference.
Sitting here today with our good friend, Gary Mahaffey of Insurance for Seniors and Disabled. Gary, listener asks, Walt, I got a call from someone telling me that they were from Medicare and they wanted to review my current insurance plan with me. I thought it was a scam, and I just hung up on them. I'd like Gary's opinion on this call.
Great job, listener. I tell my customers that neither Medicare or Social Security will ever give you a call. Everything with the government is done in writing for backup. I even have charlatans telling my customers that I told them to call. Friggin' unbelievable. If you don't recognize a telephone number, don't answer the call. If you need further clarification, feel free to contact me at 864-307-8484.
There you have it, listener. Once again, Medicare and Social Security, do not call. As Gary generously offers, give him a call instead at 864-307-8484 should you have questions.
Autumn is here and the leaves are falling. Be ready for old man winter by shopping the Craft Stove Store and Patio for all your fireplace needs. Shop over 20 models of vented and vent-free propane or natural gas logs that heat for just pennies an hour and use no electricity, keeping you warm and cozy even during a power failure. Shop and save now at the Craft Stove Store and Patio for everything your hearth desires. 3002 Wade Hampton Boulevard.
Craft Stove Store and Patio.
It's football season, but don't forget the real MVPs in your life. Score big with a stunning gift from Turner's Jewelers. From custom diamond studs to an eye-catching necklace, we'll help you make the right play with our jewelry. And when it's time to say, I do, let our experts help design your own championship-worthy ring. Family-owned and trusted for generations, Turner's brings all-star service and southern charm. Visit us in Seneca's Applewood Shopping Center or at turnersjewelers.com. Turner's Jewelers, a winning experience from start to finish.
Embrace the horizon at Longview, Carolina, your private agri-hood in the foothills of the Blue Ridge Mountains. Home sites average over an acre, giving you the opportunity to own a piece of your very own mountain. With 50-mile panoramic views, a stone's throw from Easley, and a short drive from Clemson and Greenville, Longview, Carolina is your gateway to resilient living. Explore a life unbound. Visit longviewcarolina.com for your personal tour. Longview, Carolina, worlds apart, minutes away.
A fan favorite for almost four decades, Tigertown Graphics has been designing and printing t-shirts in downtown Clemson since 1988. Looking for a vintage vibe with a modern twist? Check out our latest collection of classic styles and current concepts. Find us at 360 College Avenue or shop online anytime at tigertowngraphics.com. For 37 years, it's where Tigers get their stripes.
When reliability matters, trust American Door Masters. Is your garage door opener broken? One of the most common issues we handle is garage doors that suddenly stop working. At American Door Masters, we diagnose and fix problems like broken springs, offering professional service at a great price. Serving the upstate of South Carolina, we provide top-quality garage door installation and repair. Whatever your needs, call American Door Masters today at 864-990-3075 for prompt and professional service.
Hey, y'all, this is Dabo Sweeney. In football, a strong connection between players wins games. In life, a strong connection helps everyone win. That's why I'm an Upcountry Fiber customer. They've got the fastest, most reliable internet you can get, and it's backed by folks who live here and who care about doing things the right way. Whether it's game day streaming, working from home, or keeping up with family, Upcountry Fiber is your best play. Visit upcountryfiber.com to sign up for service. Upcountry Fiber, the winning team for a stronger connection.
You've got questions, we've got answers. Get your questions in daily on the Adams & Co. roofing text line at 654-ROAR. We are the Roar, where every day is game day.
Final segment of hour number two on a Monday with Faxon and John on 105.5, 97.5, The Roar. Everybody knows nothing goes better with football than Chick-fil-A, folks. So this weekend, go with the folks at Chick-fil-A of Clemson. Go with the folks at Chick-fil-A of Seneca. They remain your reliable source for game day food. You can get your trays of nuggets, many strips, and more. Herb, class 82. Carol, class 84. They know the importance of football. They know the importance of great food. Get on that Chick-fil-A app or call Chick-fil-A of Clemson at 864-654-4655. Or Chick-fil-A of Seneca at 864-886-9080 to make sure you're all set to eat what you love during the big game. Let's get Dre in here on the phone lines, then coming to Noah, then coming to Ted. Dre, sorry for making you wait, brother. Good to hear from you as always.
Oh, no, man. You good, man. You had to get that off your chest. I understand. my man. But I actually had only two questions, but then just listening to your rant made me come up with a third one.
Okay.
So I'll start with the new. Hypothetically speaking, let's just say Gunnar Stockton wasn't committed to Muschamp and was actually committed to the University of South Carolina. Where do you see the South Carolina football program today if he was to stay committed and to be their quarterback?
Ooh.
Do you see him being benched by Sellers, or do you see Sellers waiting his time and just seeing what he does?
That's interesting. I think that unpacks like a whole new avenue because, like, does Sellers even go to South Carolina?
That was going to be my interjection there, is I think Sellers either stays at Syracuse, but then again, you had the firing of Dino Babers. That kind of opened up a lot of things. I think Lenore Sellers is playing college football somewhere else entirely, if that's the case.
Yeah, I think Gunner's probably a 3 to 4 year starter in Columbia, and they never have to go in the portal and get Rattler, and Rattler ends up somewhere else after the Oklahoma transfer. So I think there's a whole chain of domino effects. I never really thought about that. I think South Carolina would end up being pretty darn good, right? Like, I think Gunner looks good. I don't think he's some game changer, but I think he's a good player, and they would probably have a good program right now, regardless, under Beamer with Gunner at the helm.
I think results-wise, it'd be about the same as what we've seen out of South Carolina over the last couple of years. I still think like he would have been able to, with that defense they had last year, or win as many games as Sellers did last year. I think, and when he didn't have the defense, I think it would have struggled, like, you know, maybe it was the end of Rattler.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that, but that's an interesting topic, Dre. I've never thought about that.
All right, second thing, I'm going to switch things up. I want to talk a little bit of realignment here.
Okay.
So a couple of days ago, I seen a post, Florida State is joining the Big 12 in beach volleyball. First of all, why doesn't ACC have beach volleyball if we're a coastal conference? I mean, we're no longer the Atlantic Coast Conference because of Cal and Stanford, so I've just been calling us the All-Coast Conference lately. But, I mean, why don't we have beach volleyball? And the first part of my question is, do you see Florida State joining the Big 12 and beach volleyball as an avenue for them to jump ship from the ACC when the time comes?
That's an interesting question. I don't know enough about the culture of beach volleyball to know why the ACC doesn't have that as a primary sport. I would say that Like, Clemson specifically is where the majority of my knowledge lies, and they've introduced two new women's sports in the last couple of years, and it's been lacrosse and gymnastics, right? So maybe that's just a preference from the athletic department about where they want to gear, you know, the women's sports angle of things. But, yeah, I don't know about that. As far as jumping ship, if FSU's going to jump ship, I think it would be to the SEC or the Big Ten. I don't think they would jump ship to go to the Big 12, personally. I think they're a little bit above that, if you want me to be completely honest, and I think they're trying to probably get an SEC paycheck. So I don't know if there's a correlation there, Dre, but it's definitely something to think about.
Okay. The final question, I'll take the comments on this one off the air. It's still with realignment. So let's say Dabo doesn't turn around. We have a complete fail this season. But the next couple of years, he still misses the playoffs, but just kind of mediocre, middle-of-the-pack type team. How do you think that affects Clemson jumping ship as far as going to the ACC? I mean, going to the SEC or the Big Ten? I'll take your comments off there, boss. I appreciate you.
Appreciate you, Dre. Thanks for checking in with us as always. 654-ROAR is the number.
Two things really quick. Dre, as coming up, all the institutions who currently play beach volleyball, I think Florida State and Cal are the only two sponsored scholarship programs within the league. And Cal is playing in the Mountain Pacific Sports Federation for that, which I guess makes more sense for them geographically. I'm not really sure. LSU's in that league. I don't. I hope that helps. I don't have the best answers for you. I think in terms of like looking at things moving forward, in terms of realignment, I think we need to not just focus on wins and losses, although I think that the trajectory part of Dre's phone call is completely fair to bring up. Mm-hmm. I think that it's you need to be looking at TV viewership, because the TV networks are going to be the ones who dictate the next form of realignment as to what the leagues will be looking for as to how the thing is going to be shaped moving forward. So I think that the ACC's new revenue structure is going to be fairly telling in terms of who's going to be looked at desirably or not. Now, you don't want to be going 3-9 every year, because then no one's going to want to watch you, and therefore no one's going to want to take your program. But I think it's more than just wins and losses.
I agree with that. And winning and losing is obviously very, very important. And trajectory is very, very important as well. But I do think that Clemson is to the point from an athletic department standpoint in totality where they're going to be at a really, really attractive sell to a power league regardless of who's coaching any of the programs. That's just kind of what my takeaway is. Like, Clemson's right. Going to provide undeniable value and be a valuable addition to whatever league they could potentially end up in down the road. I still do think we're multiple years away from getting the ball rolling on anything related to that, though. So
I'd be looking at like end of the decade for yeah. Was when that, I mean, 28 into 29 is when you'll start seeing things start to lay the groundwork for a lot of that.
Yeah, and I think Graham and everybody involved with the legal team did a phenomenal job of making the best of the situation in the short term as well this past offseason. So shout out to those guys as they continue to do a great job. Let's get Noah and Spartanburg in here. Noah, appreciate the phone call, man, and hope you had a good weekend.
Hey, how you doing? I'm doing good. I had a good weekend.
Yes, sir. Fun weekend of football. Great games in college, great games in the NFL.
Yeah, I was calling to ask, talk to you a little bit about the Bama-Georgia game. I thought that was a fantastic game. I think Bama might have the best receiving room in the country, just all the weapons and the way they can just use all the different receivers. Bernard was getting jet sweeps and touches as a running back. I mean, Williams is unreal. I mean, he dropped a touchdown to open the game, but, I mean, I think they have the best receiving room in the country, and I think Bama shouldn't be played with. I think Simpson looked incredible the whole first half. I'm not going to say he looked bad in the second half. I just think he kind of came back down to earth a little bit,
yeah.
And Georgia kind of locked in. But they got a tough schedule. They got a real tough rest of their schedule. Tough. Same thing with South Carolina. Like, South Carolina is about to enter a gauntlet of a schedule.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I mean, what are your thoughts?
When I look at Alabama, I think that their undeniable biggest strength as a team is pass protection. And I think that's the biggest thing and takeaway for me. The run blocking has been pretty pedestrian throughout the course of the season. And I think if they want to go to the college football playoff and be a team that's going to rip off, you know, 8 or 9 wins and potentially vie for a spot in Atlanta, that's an element of their game that has to improve. Because in the second half, when things got rocky and they scored 0 points, it was because they couldn't run the ball consistently on Georgia. Now, the pass protection unit's grading out is one of the best in the country, and it's matching the eye test. They're keeping Ty clean. And if they keep Ty clean, he can rip it, as we saw on Saturday night. These receivers, as you said, they're nothing to be played with. I think they're good. I think the defense has received a little bit of a stock up throughout the course of the season. They seem to be a little bit more comfortable in their identity now. But I think Alabama needs to take strides in the right direction as far as running the ball goes if they want to be able to compete with a really challenging schedule, right? You got Vandy at home. That's an opponent that beat you last year. You got to go on the road to Mizzou. They're still undefeated, and they've got a really dynamic rushing attack. You got Tennessee, South Carolina, LSU, Oklahoma, and Auburn. None of these are roll the ball out, win by 20 type of games, right? Now, do I think Bama will be favored in the majority of those games and that they're the quote-unquote better team? Sure, but until Jam Miller's able to get a little bit more of an identity, I'm pumping the brakes on Bama going to Atlanta or anything along those lines. I think we just got to see a little bit more, and I think that with the amount of parity we have in college football, like, we're almost still at the information gathering phase, right? Like, we don't know what these teams are made of to the fullest degree yet. So I like Alabama. I'm tentatively bought back into what I'm seeing, but they need to run the ball better if they want to go to the SEC championship game.
I mean, it's the SEC, so everybody assumes they're going to be loaded. But, I mean, if you go through and look at all who you think the top teams are right now, go look at the rest of their schedule, you're like, dang, they really have like two. I think every team has two games that they could lose. You know what I mean? Not saying they're going to lose two games, but there are two games all remaining on most SEC team schedule where you're like, okay, they could lose that football game on any Saturday.
Yeah.
And then next question is, where do you think about Bryce after yesterday's performance? I know I'm switching to NFL, but after
it was
yesterday
bad.
Dude,
it was terrible. Like, yeah. Bryce specifically, like, wasn't as big of a problem as the entire team just collapsed after that punt return, man. Like, you went right down the field in the opening drive of the game. You scored. You get the ball back, and it feels like you have the momentum, and then you just got the doors blown off of you. 42-13 Pats over Panthers in a game where the Panthers outgained the Pats. They had more total yardage and lost by 29 points. Like, the Panthers have a lot of issues, man, and this was definitely an undeniable setback for this team and for Bryce yesterday and their progression, respectively. But I was just really disappointed in the way that the special teams performed and how easy it was for New England to take command of that game and not look back.
How did the two young the two corners look? Because, I mean, I remember you were saying the two corners.
Yeah,
been grading out pretty daggum well.
I mean,
outside of
Stephon Diggs, receivers for the New England Patriots had 2 catches for 22 yards. Diggs had 6 for 101. He got his game off, but like, the Patriots were already at such a big advantage and a lead because of the special teams plays that swung this game that they really didn't have to do anything other than sit on the ball and play defense to win. I mean, the Panthers won on success rate on offense and defense and lost the game by 29 points.
That's insane if you really, like, when you put it like that. But who would have thought, though, for Monday night games tonight, who would have thought that Bo Nix would be the best quarterback?
Yeah, man, it's a bad slate of Monday night. Hey, we're approaching top of the hour break. Noah, thanks for the phone call, and
I appreciate
you checking in.
As always.
Yeah,
have a good one.
Of course, you too. Let's get Ted in here real quick. We got about 3 minutes for top of the hour. Ted, hope you had a good weekend, man, and our Brave season has come to a conclusion.
It has, and, you know, I love what they did for Charlie Morton. That was classic send-off, and tip of the cap from McCutcheon was even better. But, you know, enough of the good, in with the bad time. You know, we lost that game Friday night because of the turnovers and stupid penalties. You know, we did not lose that game because of a play at the end of the second overtime. We got outplayed in a hostile environment, and the one thing I would have done if I was Mike Norvell, getting that touchdown with 34 seconds left on the clock, I think I would have just put it all on the line right there and went for two and been done with it.
Yep.
You know, hostile environment, you're not gonna. It's harder to win an overtime game in a hostile environment. And you know, I didn't have a problem with the catch not being a catch. What I had a problem with was when they rolled out their field goal unit when they were supposed to be putting their two-point package out there, and they didn't do anything. They didn't penalize them. They didn't make them use a timeout. They didn't do anything. They just gave them a pass. And I don't understand how that's not an invalid procedure and a five-yard penalty. That was a greater concern to me than the the catch, no catch type deal. You know, catch it the first time and don't bobble it, and it's never a question.
Yes.
But, you know, we got outplayed. The good news is everything we still want to do is in front of us. It starts Saturday, bringing in Miami, and I think we're going to win that game. I think that loss is going to burn, and I think they're going to run the heck out of them in practice this week. So I look for a big bounce back this weekend. I don't have a total yet. I'll call in towards the end of the week when I feel a little bit better about it. But that's my take on Friday's game. Thanks, and y'all have a good one.
Yeah, appreciate you checking in with us, Ted. 654 ROAR is the number if you'd like to check in. And, yeah, I mean, listen, Noles fan and Ted kind of hit it on the money both ways. I wholeheartedly agree with Ted for what it's worth. I don't understand how Virginia was able to get away. Like, there has to be a flag or a timeout charge there. You can't reset the play clock and give them an advantage for not knowing the rules. Like, Tony Elliott coached about the best game he possibly can. Him and his staff did not know the overtime rules. And then they got no penalization for that, no forcing of a timeout having to be utilized. They convert the two-point conversion, and the rest is history. So we'll talk a little bit about that on the other side of a quick break as well. Rough weekend for ACC officials. Lord, sound familiar? More college football and NFL talk with Fax and Childress and John Haidt here on 105.5, 97.5 The Roar. Final hour up next.
WCCP-FM 105.5, Clemson, Greenville, Anderson. WAHT-AM 1560, Cowpens. 97.5, Spartanburg. We are...